You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Times Higher Education issue review podcast for the edition covering the 28th of September to the 4th of October 2017. My name is Chris Parr. I'm joined by news editor Chris Havergal, books editor Matthew Rice and deputy news editor John Morgan. As we record this podcast, Jeremy Corbyn has just stepped away from the podium at the 2017 Labour Party conference in Brighton. John Morgan has been at the event and will give us his take in just a moment. Chris Havergal currently believes it's 2 o'clock in the morning. That's because he's spent the last week in Australia speaking to a number of key HE figures, including Education Minister Simon Birmingham. Find out what they talked about shortly. And Sir David Cannadine, distinguished historian and new president of the British Academy, has been speaking to Matthew Rice about his latest book and his track record of outspoken scholarship. It's an extended interview feature this week, and we'll hear all about it at the end of the podcast. But first, to politics and to party conferences particularly. John, you've been down in Brighton at the Labour Party conference this week. Corbyn's just finished speaking there as we record this. What were your takeaways from your time there? What were the headlines?
Probably wasn't that much that takes things forward in terms of Labour's policy to abolish tuition fees, the big questions that universities would have about that policy are still very much unanswered. What we do know about the policy is it's been electoral gold dust for Jeremy Corbyn. Mm. It was the policy that was his first flagship policy in his leadership campaign when he sensationally won the Labour leadership. And it was a policy that was the most expensive policy by far in Labour's manifesto. And opinions will vary on what factor it played in Labour's unexpected level of success, but it was certainly something that helped deliver in a number of key constituencies where Labour picked up surprise wins and increased some very tight marginals into massive majorities. But it's still very much at the level of politics, the tuition fees pledge, I'd say, rather than detailed policy. So fringe meetings on HE at the Labour conference, Gordon Marsden did so briefly address the issue of whether it would mean the return of student number controls and a cap on places. And he said it, his argument is that it would, that Labour, based on sort of current student numbers, wouldn't see any need to sort of to cut anything if it did introduce that policy. Numbers can maintain at the same level, but Vice Chancellor's two big questions for many of those who work in universities would be, what's the impact on access if you bring back student number controls and you also lose the fee income that goes towards access programmes under offer agreements? Does that add up to kind of a real double hammer blow on access? And those are the kind of questions that are still unanswered in terms of what Labour's policy would mean for universities.
Does that matter as far as the wider voting public is concerned? When do they need to put the flesh on the bones, or can they this sort of ride this campaign pledge for all the campaigning value that it has?
No, as we've seen, it probably doesn't matter electorally. It's a policy that gets Corbyn and Labour supporters out to vote. But if you're talking about it in policy terms, it probably is necessary to win over some support from universities and vice-chancellors who otherwise will be expressing some scepticism, which may have some kind of impact in public debate in future elections. I guess we also saw at the conference a little bit of to-ing and fro-ing of the balance between FE and HE and Labour's policies. Angela Rayner, the Education Secretary, has long sort of argued that FE doesn't get the attention it should do, and supposedly behind the scenes has been saying HE's getting, you know, far too many costly spending commitments from Labour when FE's getting not enough. Mm. And it was notable that in Jeremy Corbyn's speech he only made a glancing reference to the pledge to abolish tuition fees, but put a lot of focus on FE and talked about a visit he'd made to a further education college. And you also saw that in that kind of argument in comments from Andy Burnham in an interview he gave during the conference, where he was saying that, you know, in Manchester, where he's mayor, he wouldn't spend all of that money on HE, given the choice. He'd spent some of it on technical education, and Angela Rayner notably didn't mention the fees pledge at all in her speech.
Indeed, absolutely. There's more coverage from the conference. We've had a series of blogs coming out that you'll find in the opinion section on our website, timeshighereducation.com. The likes of Pam Tatlow, Andy Westwood and more writing there. And coming up at the weekend very quickly, John, it's the Conservative Conference. It's their turn to have their say.
Yep, that's right. And obviously there have been a succession of reports in the press that the Conservatives are looking at major reforms to the current system in a bid to win over young voters, and they're appearing slightly panicked by the impact of Labour's policy at the election. So one suggestion is fees could be lowered to £7,500, which we've looked at in this week's magazine, looking at the impact of that policy. The idea is that fees would be lowered to that level, but grants would make up the difference to 9k in science and technology subjects. So we've looked at which universities would be the biggest losers in terms of funding, and at the £1.4 billion cut that would deliver across the English sector in terms of funding. And then the other ideas that the Tories are supposedly looking at are tweaking elements of the student loan system to really improve things for graduates in terms of the repayment threshold and possibly the interest rate, although that's kind of more of a debatable point whether that is a benefit to any but the highest earners. And there's also some ideas in circulation about varying tuition fees according to universities' graduate earnings. But at the Tory conference, I think we'd expect not too much in the way of detailed announcements about fees. Certainly that would have to wait to the budget, but maybe some kind of general statement of direction about where the government might go on student support.
Indeed, you'll find all of the news that does break there from an HE perspective on our site as ever. Thank you, John. Chris, from one political system to another, excuse me, you've been over in Australia meeting some pretty key figures out there.
Yeah, and if you think it's a difficult political environment for universities in the UK at the moment, it's much the same, if not worse, it could be argued, in Australia. I spent last week in Australia. It's a sort of very interesting time to be there, with the government proposing a funding cut of 2.5% to university budgets, proposing to increase tuition fees by 7.5%, and also to make 7.5% of sector funding that remains dependent on a range of university performance measures, probably linked to student outcomes, in the same vein as England's Teaching Excellence Framework. While I was out there, I had the opportunity to speak to Simon Birmingham, who's the Federal Education Minister. He was saying he was very hopeful still that the legislation that all these reforms are attached to would get through. He's promised to be very pragmatic, he says, in his dealings with the Senate, where they're trying to get the reforms through. Maybe suggesting that there might be a bit of wiggle room in the Australian government's position in a bid to win those votes. That said, having discussions with key figures in the sector out there, there's a lot of scepticism about the government ultimately will be able to get these measures through. They're dependent on the support of a number of crossbench senators to be able to get these reforms through, and they're sort of in the situation where if they make some concessions to please one group of senators, the suggestion seems to be that then that angers another group of senators, and so you still don't have the right numbers to be able to get the reforms across the line. That said, I mean, universities are concerned about the impact of these cuts, but while this impasse in the Senate drags on, the continuing uncertainty clearly has a damaging impact in itself.
Did you get a sense out there, speaking to people, of how they feel about Australia following some of the UK initiatives, in particular perhaps the Teaching Excellence Framework?
I think the the concern, rather like the debate was in England, is the sorts of measures that you might use to judge university performance, whether the sector has actually been consulted on those measures, and whether they actually have much direct link and much merit as a proxy for the teaching and educational standards of a university. Clearly with the TEF in England, where the measures were around student satisfaction, retention and graduate employment, there's a strong body of evidence to say actually those were pretty poor proxies for educational standards, albeit perhaps some of the only ones which were available at this point. It's likely that Australia will go in the same direction when it comes to looking at metrics, and you'll see the same debate happening again. I guess the thing that makes it perhaps particularly problematic in Australia is that rather than being sort of a distinct higher education piece of policy with its own sort of consultation and mechanism around that, this is part of the Australian government's budget, and I think universities are very concerned to see the future of the country's higher education sector. The country's third biggest export is its universities and the education they provide, being decided upon not through consultation but as part of a government budget process which clearly has a tight timescale on it and gets tied up with the wider political debate.
Indeed. You can read that in the magazine, of course, and at timeshighereducation.com. Should flag up also the lead news story this week is the latest from our Lindau Nobel Laureate survey, with many Nobel Prize winners stating in that survey that bias against women explains why so few female researchers have won science's top award. I'll leave it there, you'll find it online, and it's well worth searching for. On to features. Matthew, you pen our extended interview feature this week, and it's with Sir David Cannadine. Tell me more.
Well, Sir David Cannadine is a very distinguished historian. He's just become president of the British Academy, and the British Academy is, of course, full of very, very high-quality fellows across the sciences and humanities. But I think it would be fair to say that it's sometimes seen as having a bit of a sort of image problem, as being rather traditionalist, patrician, perhaps a little bit stuffy, and so on. Now, Cannadine has just written a book, which took him 20 years, delivered about 17 years late, but it is a overview of the 19th century in Britain, very readable, very lively. He's clearly, a major figure, and this is a very important book which will become a standard text. On the other hand, he wrote an earlier book, which is a sort of very critical of identity politics. It comes quite close to saying that, feminism and Marxism as sort of intellectual projects have, had their day. And so the issue, it seems to me, and one of the things I talked to him about, is it's very obvious from anyone who hangs out with people in the social sciences and humanities that there is a lot of feminism, Marxism, identity politics is, a very large part of the more radical end of what's going on in these disciplines. Mm. And, whether appointing someone like Cannadine to be the president of the British Academy, what kind of message that is giving, whether it might put people off. And he defended himself very vigorously and said he has very strong views, but that the British Academy should be a broad church, and that's fine. But I do think it does raise some questions.
Mm. Do you think he can change its image?
I think it may be hard. I mean, he says he wants it to be more diverse, both in, I'm sure he's all for encouraging, as most of the people there, encouraging more diversity in terms of gender and race and social background and so on. But in terms of the kind of subjects which are considered, worthy of study, I think that's seems to be rather more problematic, but only time will tell.
Indeed. Well, you can read that interview on our site and in the print magazine as well, of course. Our cover feature this week looks at how to get published. We've asked 16 scholars to give their tips on pitching, editing and writing. We've also got some blogs on that online too, and you can follow the online discussion if you go to Twitter, if you're on Twitter, on the hashtag MyPublishingTip. But that's another fascinating read which you can access via the usual channels. That's all for this week's THE Issue Review podcast, however. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can follow us on Twitter at Times Higher Ed. You'll find us on Facebook and LinkedIn too. Just search there. That's all for this week's Issue Review podcast.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.